President Trump's change of heart on a big China-based company. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. If this tweet is to be believed, President Trump is executing a dramatic U-turn on China trade. It involves a 7-year U.S. ban on a Chinese telecommunications company. ZTE was found to have busted Iran and North Korea sanctions. It also makes equipment U.S. intelligence agencies regard as a cybersecurity threat. ZTE halted most of its operations last week after this U.S. ban. But after talking to a senior Chinese official, President Trump tweeted this weekend he wants his Commerce Department to ease up on ZTE because, quote, too many jobs in China lost. For international trade experts, it was one of those drop your coffee mug into your Cheerios moments.
I was stunned. I've been handling these issues for a long time, and to see the President of the United States weigh in on what really is a law enforcement matter was quite shocking.
Douglas Jacobson is an international trade lawyer with Jacobson Burton Kelly in Washington.
This case has been going on for more than 6 years. And so ZTE has had several opportunities, and the U.S. government weighed in over 2 years ago and imposed the largest fine on a company ever, $1.3 billion, for their activities with respect to violating U.S. sanctions. And so this particular action that took place last month, which was to deny their export privileges, was a follow-up on the settlement agreement that they reached last year.
So, surprise, it's unusual, but how do you read this? Do you think it maybe is a softening of the U.S. approach to international trade, particularly with China?
Well, with this president, it's a little bit hard to know. I really don't think this is linked necessarily to all of the other U.S.-China trade-related issues. I think this perhaps may be more linked to trying to curry favor with the Chinese or do something in exchange, perhaps, for China's commitment for something else, whether it's China's role within North Korea nuclear program or to extract some other concession. But it's certainly highly unusual to use a legal case to try to extract some concession or to as part of some other deal.
And as we've learned, sometimes there is a gap. There is daylight between a presidential tweet and policy.
Well, absolutely. So now the devil is in the details, because I know for sure that the Commerce Department and the law enforcement community who is handling this case, they now have to figure out what to do. So the president directed the Commerce Department to do something, and now they have to figure out how to do it, because we really are in uncharted territory. There is nothing in the regulations. There's nothing, you know, in any statute on how to address this issue. So they'll have to come up with something that really will be out of the box.
All right. Some context from Douglas Jacobson, international trade lawyer at Jacobson Burton Kelly in D.C. Mr. Jacobson, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Here's a question that most people can't answer. It's not about string theory or the meaning of life. Most people don't know the interest rate they're paying on their credit card balances. This is from a new study from Bankrate.com. From WESA in Pittsburgh, Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
According to Bankrate, just under 40% of credit card holders are certain of the interest rate they're paying. Adam Levitin is a law professor at Georgetown who focuses on consumer finance. He says he's surprised the number isn't higher.
Pretty much all interest rates on credit cards these days are variable interest rates. They move based on a market index.
So unless you follow daily changes to what's known as the federal funds rate, you probably don't know for sure. The average credit card rate is around 16%. The study found that low-income borrowers tend to be the most unaware of their rates.
They're so busy taking care of other things that debt may not be as high on their priority list.
That's Matt Schultz, who worked on the study that looked at borrowers who carried a balance for at least 6 months. And then there's the fine print, says Christopher Olivola, who teaches at Carnegie Mellon's business school.
It's effortful work, right, to have to kind of read through all these things, think about all these numbers.
But those numbers can add up and add years to the time it'll take to pay off your debt. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Lower airfares are making it sweeter to book travel across the Atlantic, especially to Europe this summer. Competition between low-cost and traditional carriers are helping to bring prices down, but enjoy it while you can, Marketplace's Renata Sago reports.
There are more nonstop flights from the U.S. to Europe this July. 5.2% more compared to last year, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation. The number of seats available is also up, 6.2%. That's partly because traditional U.S. airlines are expanding their routes, along with low-cost carriers.
Low-fare airlines are the price leaders. They set the bar, and the other airlines follow.
That's travel industry analyst Henry Hardeveld. He says softer domestic and international airline regulations have given smaller name, low-cost European carriers such as WOW and Edelweiss a chance to expand to the U.S. market. But this trend could be short-lived, according to George Hobica. He is the founder of AirfareWatchdog.com, which tracks flight deals.
If fuel prices keep on going up, some of these airlines may not be able to maintain these low prices.
And, Hardeveld says, the cheaper fares do come at a cost. More irregular flight schedules and add-on fees for bags. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
And I tell you, I love a good analog clock, but apparently I'm increasingly alone. There's news from Britain that schools are putting in digital clocks because students don't quite get the little hand is on the 11 and the big hand is on the zero business. This is especially an issue during timed exams, British teachers are quoted as saying. Times change, as it were. I was talking to a New Jersey high school teacher with fabulous handwriting who says many of her students are also baffled by cursive script. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.